Hello, everybody. Welcome to the Attention Please podcast, now on video. If you like this podcast, kindly like, share, and subscribe. You know what to do. So I'm back after a long hiatus. Hiatus mostly of my own decision. I just haven't had any topics to broadcast on or to come in front of video for. So that's maybe the reason why I haven't podcasted for a long time. But I've been feeling the urge to talk about the Indian elections for a while, and the Indian elections have been going on and on and on, like an episode of Uttar Ramayan when it first started. Remember, there was one episode where in Uttar Ramayan, I think the baby Ram, it kind of went back, played with a ball for the entire episode. That was all it was. So the Indian elections have kind of become like that. I wish they hadn't dragged it out for so long. And anyways, for whatever reason, I just wanted to put down my thoughts again. I don't predict elections. I'm not Yogendra Yadav, which means I don't predict elections. So none of what I'm going to say is backed by anything like data. Or as Yogendra Yadav said, everything he'd said was also not backed by data. He said that straight off the bat, but it was based on his travels. Which at least I didn't know was part of the scientific method, that you could make predictions on the number of seats, something as precise as this, based on me traveling to different places and asking people in a very unstructured, unscientific way. But Yogendra Yadav is not the topic for this podcast. I've already written something about him, which I'm pretty sure you have read already, because it kind of became viral. It's become viral many times. Whenever I repost it, it becomes viral again, even though when I originally wrote it, it was in 2020, and it was a reference to Robin Uthappa being let go of by KKR. And even though that reference is possibly nowadays lost, that still doesn't prevent people from appreciating that post. Anyway, so I've been asked several times on Twitter, who do I think is going to win the elections? And for me, it's never been in doubt. It was always going to be Narendra Modi and the BJP. And as far as I know, despite, of course, followers of the Congress Party or followers of the India Alliance in general continuously tweeting and continuously putting forward this narrative that Modi is losing without, again, without any kind of data or anything close to data to back that up. And I understand why they have to do it, because no political party wants to accept defeat till, to quote Ravi Shastri, the fat lady sings. But I don't think, even if you look at what Yogendra Yadav said, which is possibly, again, this is Yogendra Yadav's, I wouldn't want to dignify it with an by calling it an analysis, but more a statement of his fantasy. Even his fantasy puts pretty much, basically pretty much says it's going to be a BJP government or an India government. Now, the problem, and this is what I've always felt, and I've never been able to understand, why Modi, and when I say Modi, I mean Modi Shah and the BJP think tank, why they decided to make this election about Is Paar Char Sau Paar. Because by putting, first of all, it's very difficult for any kind of government in any functioning democracy on its third term to buck incumbency and increase their vote share. This is inevitable that there will be a lot of people who are going to be pissed off at the government. It is inevitable, because no government in this world, if it is a democratic government, can maintain its promises. So especially over a period of 10 years, in India, each term is 5 years. So there'll be many voters who, new voters, who have never seen anything. Let's say you're 18 years old or 19 years old, you've never seen anything other than the BJP government. So of course you blame the state of your affairs. And nobody is ever happy with their state of affairs, especially if you're 18 and 19 years old, because you don't, the world hasn't calibrated itself in front of you. You will be very dissatisfied with the government. So any government which is on its which is in its 10 years anniversary should be very careful of the youth vote, irrespective of how well it has performed. And of course, people will say BJP government hasn't performed well. I'm not going to get into that debate in this podcast. But BJP calling for, and that's something which I kind of failed to understand at the get-go, is why they use that slogan of Is Paar Char Sau Paar. Because what it does is it makes a BJP victory seem like a defeat. If they don't cross 400, It will be spun off, and this is a this we do it always in cricket, a psychological victory. Even if you lose the series, we want a psychological victory. It bodes it, there is no upside, in my opinion, of making this election about going past 400 seats, because it was, I don't think it's even a reasonable expectation. And I don't see why they need to do it anyways. So that was one thing which, and I believe that the BJP is suffering because of that, because whatever elections are, whatever I believe is going to happen, I don't think they're going to exceed their performance in 2019. That is not going to happen. And it is an unrealistic expectation for it to. It doesn't, but now when they don't make, when they not only don't make 400, but they also don't make their 219 numbers, it will be seen to be a defeat. And of course, it will be spun by the Yogendra Yadavs and, you know, their ilk as a defeat, even though BJP would have won very comfortably. And the second reason why I felt that it was not going to be possible to cross 2019 was because of, you know, the seat arrangements. There were in any place where you have a one-on-one contest, is obviously the BJP is going to lose vote share. So I just, and that's really the thing which, and I will very very helpful, it'd be very helpful for somebody in the comment section to explain to me why this was even a target. It was basically their slogan is about Char So Par. So does that really get people out to vote? I would say it makes people more complacent. They don't want to come out to vote, but anyways, they're going to win. Why should I come out to vote? And it also creates this situation where sometimes people might feel that, you know, that they're not very happy with their current MP, but they're happy with the government in center, or rather, they don't want to vote for Congress, but they might still send a message to their MP by voting for the other candidate. Now, they won't do it if they know that every vote counts, every seat counts. But if you say it's 400, I mean, we are so confident that we are going for 400, we are going to, in any case, win in a canton, then you bring these things into play. The second thing, which I believe is absolute, which perhaps is working against the BJP, is of course that the Congress is, and their communication has been much better this time. I think they were nowhere in the game in 2014, in 2019. Pulwama basically, you know, Chowkidar Chor Hai just blew it out of water. This time, I believe that the Congress strategy, I think it's much better, because they have been able to formulate something which again, I personally believe is a very dangerous thing. But in terms of, but that's my personal opinion. But in terms of communicating what they stand for, because one of the things that I've always felt is it's very clear what the BJP stands for. But what does the Congress stand for in 2024? How does the Congress want to market itself to young voters? What does it really stand for? What will it bring to the young voter? And I think that the Congress has been able to articulate that fairly well, that they're looking for aggressive wealth redistribution based on caste. Again, I think this is a terrible thing, but it is something. I mean, many people would say that the BJP's philosophy is also a terrible thing. So, you know, that's a value-based judgment. But in terms of purely electoral strategy, I think the Congress has done much better this time. Now, one thing that I've always said in my podcast before, that I don't think that people actually, when they vote on things like GDP, or they vote on a vague feeling of kind of a feel good. It's an emotional decision. You don't take decisions based on, because ultimately everybody knows in a way that nothing is going to improve too much. I think all of us are pragmatists, whether we articulate it in this way or not. Everybody knows to an extent that there will be a base level of corruption, that politicians, regardless of which party, are fundamentally crooked. So everybody knows these things. So it's not that anybody expects anything better. They all know that they take money from industrialists, electoral bonds. So these things are pretty much the baseline of people's expectation of how the political system works. So given that, so there is no distinction in their mind between Modi and, let's say, Rahul Gandhi. It's not that if they vote out Modi, they will get a fundamentally better, different system. I think most people know that. So what it then comes down to is whether you trust the person who's delivering the promise. And that's why, and I think this is where BJP has done well. It has created a personality cult around Narendra Modi. So there's those kinds of interviews which you see where aap thakte kyun nahi? They keep on asking that question. Why is that important? And many people would laugh at it. But the point that the reason why that those kind of questions are seeded in those interviews is purely to create this impression of Narendra Modi as this superhuman working around the clock for you. And Rahul Gandhi doesn't get questions like that. On the other hand, the persistent, regardless of what Rahul Gandhi says, the persistent impression of Rahul Gandhi is a guy who vacations abroad, who vanishes after every electoral loss, who's never there to take personal responsibility. So no matter what Rahul Gandhi may say as the policy or philosophy of the Congress, the problem is that there is not a lot of personality cult around Rahul Gandhi to the extent that there is around Narendra Modi. So in many places, then people might be attracted to the philosophy of Congress. They might want to vote for an alternative, but they're going to stumble on the person who is on the lead of the ticket. That is going to be the problem. And with Narendra Modi, that is the problem is the opposite way around. People might have problems with the BJP. They might have a lot of problems with the BJP because of anti-incumbency, because of some of their general policies also. But overall, I mean, if you ask me personally, I think the BJP has done fairly well in the last 10 years. Again, given the baseline of corruption and the baseline of basically inefficiency that any Indian government, any democracy will have, and it definitely Indian democracy will have as it's part of a systemic problem. So given that, I don't think that the other than demonetization, which was essentially shooting themselves in the foot, which is something which they should have absolutely avoided, I don't think there's anything else that the BJP government could have done radically differently. I think Article 370 was an absolute victory, total victory. I was skeptical when it happened, but kudos to the BJP for that. I wish they had run a little bit more on that, but they haven't, unfortunately. And that's also been puzzling. So I think that the major reason why the BJP will win is, and I'm kind of sticking my neck out, but mind you, I also said that SRH and KKR will come last before the IPL began. So please take whatever I say with a pinch of salt. This is the level at which I operate. I totally get that criticism. But I still think that the BJP is going to win. And the main reason for that is, of course, because of Narendra Modi at the head of the ticket. Because he's a person, and whether you feel that it's an image which has been fraudulently created, or whether you believe that he is genuinely like that, people just feel an affinity to Modi that they don't feel, I believe, to Rahul Gandhi. And that is because of the way Rahul Gandhi has been projected. I'm not saying Pappu and stuff. He's definitely, to his credit, nobody looks upon him anymore as a fool. I don't think nobody does that. I think people take him seriously now, and that's good. He's been able to go past that, but there's still a lot of doubt on his sincerity, on how much he's willing to work for the Indian people, and his connection with Robert Vadra and the general impression of the Gandhi family does not help in creating that image. That's why I've always said that the Congress can become a viable opposition only if it jettisons Rahul Gandhi and their entire family. Because I don't think this is a battle of perceptions they can ever win as long as they have a Gandhi at the head of the ticket. This is going to be a problem that there's no solution to this except this one solution which they're not prepared to do. So at the end, again, I'll conclude by saying I predict definitely not a 400 par. I'd be very surprised if they crossed 400. I would definitely also be surprised if they exceeded their mandate in 2019. And I think that's natural. There should be no problem with accepting that because there is always going to be anti-incumbency and there will be places where the opposition by allying in the India Alliance have kind of made it a one-on-one contest. So those things have to be factored in, but I definitely think that overall Modi will form the ne I mean BJP will form the next government without any trouble. But again, as I said, stranger things have happened. Let's see how things roll out on June 6th. Thank you for listening, and let's hope that the next podcast episode is sooner than this one. Bye-bye.